You're listening to The Cannabis Hangout, two girls, one bowl, and a podcast that is breaking the stigma of marijuana. My name is Brannon.
And my name is Saba. We will be connecting with a community of cannabis enthusiasts by educating people,
sharing stories from medical marijuana patients,
and interviewing industry leaders while debunking cannabis myths.
So we invite you to come roll with us
while we break it all down.
Hi, friends. Welcome back to another episode. I'm Saba.
And I'm Brannon.
And we are your hosts of The Cannabis Hangout. Today's guest is someone I met through the industry years ago. A few months back, we ran back into one another, and of course, just as I remember, he was on the grind, as he always has been. He has his hands in a few different aspects of the cannabis industry, from processing to banking. We're super excited to dive in deeper with him, so guys, please welcome Walter to the Cannabis Hangout.
Hey, everybody.
Hi, Walter.
I really appreciate it. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to sit down with us and share your knowledge and just your cannabis journey and everything in between.
Oh man.
So before we dive in, Walter, will you please share with us the first time that you consumed cannabis and what that experience was like for me from what you remember?
Oh man, this is such a corny story.
I love it. I love corny stories.
So I grew up a dare kid, right? So I was always told that you smoke weed, you're gonna do crack next.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like
yeah.
That was a big fear tactic. So I was pretty relatively a good kid. Not people who smoked weed were
right.
bad, but I was playing sports. That was my goal, trying to get up out of the mud. And I graduated college. My first job, my roommate was working at the processing center, and I was like, man, give me a big boy job.
Yeah.
Get me a big boy job and I'll smoke with you. And he was like, he goes, bet. All right, great. So we lit up. We're playing Call of Duty.
College right now, right?
I just graduated.
You just graduated.
So like, I'm like 22, 23.
So you're a little older.
Yeah.
That was about my time.
Yeah.
Like it was after college, whenever.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We're rare.
Yeah. We are.
we got the job and we sparked up, man, and I threw up the first time I ever smoked.
No way.
I mean, it was like so, you know, chronic had,
yeah,
you know, it was so strong.
I mean, how much did you smoke?
It was like a little bitty, teeny, I choked, I coughed, went out back, threw up next to his dog's doghouse, you know. I love, you know, that was my very first time, and then there was a lot of time in between that and me consuming regularly, you know,
yeah.
because it was just... I didn't know people. It wasn't mm-hmm. my circle, right? So
for
I was
sure.
I was trying to play ball. I was trying to, you know, I had to pass drug tests.
Mm-hmm. Was it basketball or football?
Football.
Okay.
Yeah, so.
Did you say where you grew up?
So I'm from Shawnee.
Okay.
Grew up on the, you know, Sac and Fox Nation Indian Reservation.
Okay.
North of town. Saw some terrible things.
Yeah.
Just tried to be on the straight and narrow because I didn't want that to become my my reality, right?
Right?
So I just wanted to be the best I could be as far as the world, as I saw the world. And that led me to, you know, the path that I was on. The journey, how I got into the industry and how my mind changed, there's a lot of people in my family that are sick, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you got cancer that's prevalent. And the first time I heard about medicinal cannabis, it was through RSO, and I had an aunt who was dosing, and she had a son-in-law who was living in Colorado, worked out, and she got better. And, at that point, my mind kind of changed, and then sometime it passed, and the industry came and, you know, hopped in. So,
yeah,
that was the first time I ever smoked, though. I threw up. I let everybody know, cat's out of the bag.
Cat is out of the bag. Yeah. I love to hear it. So do you remember what, like, I know you said you were a dare kid, but what was your perception of cannabis? Because for me personally, I grew up in the dare era, but I'm not going to say I was like a
But like a school assemblies, we always had the Dare Red
Ribbons. 100%. And I was so like,
smoke weed.
Yeah, I was so against consuming cannabis. Like people that did that, I was like, ew, that's so gross. Like I remember I had a very negative connotation of cannabis prior to me consuming.
This is a deep question.
And so what was your perception? Because even as a little kid, you know.
This is a great question. So my mom smoked weed.
Okay.
And at school, I was being told one thing. At home, it was different. Mm-hmm. My dad, pulled the curtain all the way back. My dad used to run it. He was big time in Oklahoma City. My grandmother and them had a pool hall on 2nd Street. And, my mom was pretty well kept ever since she was 17 with my dad because he was the man. And so growing up, it was always around. I could always smell it when I walked in the house. I was just confused, because you go to school, do what the teachers say.
Right. Did your parents ever talk to you about it, or was it something they kind of like hid?
Yeah, no, my mom was like very, I remember growing up, my mom would be laying on her king. She was a single parent household. Mm-hmm. She had a king size bed. She was a queen, I guess. And so she'd just be laid up underneath the pillow with a joint in her hand and her ashtray there, watching her stories or something and smoking. And so it wasn't,
It was very normalized in your household, but for you, it was like as a kid, it's like this,
I was conflicted.
This battle that school and everyone, all the police officers, the good.
Yeah,
is what
and
you
then the TV.
Yeah, but then everybody else, like your family is doing something different, but your family, like they're your blood, you're bred from them, and they wouldn't steer you wrong either.
Everybody in my family smoked.
Yeah.
All up and down the roster.
Okay, so you've been around it really all your life. You were just a late bloomer to the time when you were ready for it.
That's right. Yeah. And then when I was ready for it, I was really ready for it.
Yeah, no, I hear you on that.
When you consumed, do you like, only because you consumed a lot older, were you like, after you consumed, did you have any sort of like epiphany that you were like, so this is like exactly what was... This is like the opposite of what they were teaching me. Did it take you back to your childhood as to like kind of everything you've been through with your family and stuff like that?
She's
you know,
deep. I think I had to grow through childhood trauma to be ready.
Yeah.
That's what I think my journey was about. Yeah. Because like I there have been so many things that happened when I was a little kid that I could never make sense of. Mm-hmm. And if I would have consumed early, I wouldn't be who I am.
Yeah, it's like almost it was right for you to do it the way you did it. Like it was that was the timing.
I had to be an older man.
Yeah,
if I was a younger man. Yeah. The path that everybody in my circle was on, who was doing it, unfortunately, and I hope this isn't any shade to anybody, but the people who were doing it when I was young, they're not, their lives are full of strife and struggle. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that's because of marijuana. I think that's more so of our environment and they're so introduced to it that way. Mm-hmm. So whatever safeguarded me from those perils are things that, were meant for me. So once it was meant for me, it came in abundance.
It didn't miss you.
It's cool to hear you say that because I feel like that goes so much to like, first of all, being a kid and having that discipline and like being aware is not often, I feel like, found because it's so easy to succumb to your environment, especially
That's
if
true.
Everyone around you is doing it.
Yes.
And it's like you've gone all the way through adulthood now because in your 20s you've hit adulthood and like that was your first time consuming it. And it's cool to hear how aware you were throughout even your teenage years, because boys are rambunctious and that is just and they're not afraid to try and take risks, versus girls are a little bit more like, we watch the boundaries a little bit. We're a little bit more mindful of things like that. So the fact that you were aware enough, even like you say the word trauma, like even being aware in your trauma and mindful of that and so intentional with your consumption, I think that's really cool. And also I feel
appreciate
like that probably helped you set you up for like where you are now, because I'm sure your consumption is so intentional and it's not just like, oh, I'm just gonna get super stoned. Cause like I like to get super stoned. There's days where I'm like, I just want to get really high and just chill.
I like to get baked for sure.
Yes, but I feel like it's just with a little like the intentionality is just always in the back of your head. That's something that will never really go away.
Well, it's for my purpose. I mean, a couple things. You asked how my family presented it. My mom always told me if I ever wanted to try it, I could smoke it with her. It was just such an awkward thing between her and I that I never felt comfortable.
Like, but she felt like she needed to tell you that so you wouldn't go elsewhere for
it. That's right. Mm-hmm. That's extremely true.
Yeah.
And then to what you're saying, just to be aware, I think that played a big part in who I am and how I consume. Now it's completely intentional. Mm-hmm. There's times where, you know, it's the weekend and I'm letting loose.
For sure.
But really, I banged heads on the football field for like 20 years,
mm-hmm.
right? And so every day when I wake up, I got some sort of ache or pain.
Mm-hmm.
And cannabis really helps me not be irritated.
Yeah.
I'll just tell you.
Yeah, like, I get it.
Be irritated and walk into rooms and, you know, snap at everybody. I was coached hard. I'm a championship athlete. Mm-hmm. I like things done the way that I like them done.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I can sometimes have a very unpleasant
attitude. That's so funny you're saying that, because I'm sitting here looking at you and I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, you seem like such a gentle giant. Like,
that's because
every
of
time
cannabis.
Yeah, every time I ran into you, you're so gentle and soft, and I'm like, okay, you feel safe,
man. Oh wow, that, I appreciate that. I mean, you know, there's two sides to all of it, and, mm-hmm. and leadership is tough, man. People don't realize the mental anguish that mm-hmm. goes into being a leader, and then being able to wake up every day and do it again. So, cannabis allows me to just be myself mm-hmm. and, be completely present in the moment, be able to make decisions when I need to versus complaining and, not going about my day.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, that's awesome. So what kind of, we all have like something we like to munch on after we consume or smoke. Like, do you have one thing that is your go-to or that like your mind is on when you're like feeling baked and hungry?
Man. All right, bet. So if you love me,
comma,
ice cream is the way to your boy's heart.
Okay, what flavor? Just,
cookies and cream every day.
Me too, Walter. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, cookies and cream all day, every day.
I love it.
I do. You know, really now I go to the frozen custard. Rusty, yeah. Rusty. Shout out Rusty's downtown Norman.
Okay.
They got the best frozen custard. So that's my treat now. But nice. if you really love me, cookies and cream.
All right. Good to know.
Bluebell.
Bluebell. Okay, Oklahoma, baby.
Hey, that's right. Yes. That's right. That's a great question.
Of course. We have to ask. We have to know. Great.
If you're ever in the Oklahoma City area, check out Chill Dispensary at 22 Northeast 10th Street.
They're good people with hand-washed, single-source live rosin, flower, pre-rolls, and other solventless products.
So go show them some love and enjoy a chill experience.
Now, back to the episode.
So as a patient first, when you personally go shopping for cannabis, what do you look for? Or like what's your preferred way of consuming cannabis? Like, what's important to you?
Okay, so I'll answer preferred way pretty clean. Mm-hmm. I like solventless rosin.
Same.
I use a Puffco,
nice.
The original, because it's a champ. It does also have a backup iSpire dab device that is really nice. Flower, to switch it up, because my tolerance allows for me to switch to flower and get that same effect.
Yes, kind of like a balance of it.
100%.
Mm-hmm. I feel that.
But as far as what I buy, it's going to be tough. Golden Trends, baby.
Yeah. we'll jump into Golden Trends, too.
I'll tell you. To me, just because I've had so many different experiences mm-hmm. in the cannabis industry, I've been in a couple different states.
Okay.
to me, packaging and presentation and retail merchandising, right? So being able to case pack your things in such a way that when it gets to the store, the store has an ability to merchandise that automatically, and it saves time, check-in time, and then it presents better in a case if you have that kind of situation. So I look for brands that are intentional to that, and then, I'll try them. And then it's quality. I mean, there's some people who are starting who don't have, they're just putting stickers on bags like that. So, I always check out the up and comers.
Mm-hmm.
If they're at a strong price point and, the packaging might be off, I'm going to try them for sure.
That's cool that you have an eye for packaging and you're drawn towards that, because I feel like people with good packaging also sometimes have, quality on their mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, because it's an intention. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's an intention. The companies that I've been with, you know, again, no nothing at anybody, but the ones that focus on packaging are very intentional in processes and quality.
So, yes, this is true. Yeah. Do you have a favorite memory that sticks out with cannabis? Like maybe a moment in your life, a concert, a trip you've been on, like something that really stands out that like you're like something that you'll take with you for the rest of your life.
Yes. So Pharrell and in our NERD, we're playing at Canes in Tulsa. And like I said,
what year was it?
This was 2008.
Damn.
Yeah.
You'll never see that again.
No, ever.
Oh,
at
no.
At the price point, you saw it too.
Pharrell.
Pharrell just, you know, jamming.
Hanging out.
Yeah. So, oh, no. Price point? No. So, we got free tickets for being students at TU because they were trying to draw people. So, we didn't know.
What?
And so, yeah, we got bloated.
Wow.
Went to Canes and was, you know, NERD. It was tight.
That's tight. And it's cool because, like, I've seen Pharrell. So I saw Pharrell when he came to Posty Fest the year before COVID. And it was cool because in that moment, like he was on probably like about an hour, but he went through all of the songs he's ever produced.
Man.
And like it was like stuff that obviously he hasn't even like sang,
his
but it's like
is thick.
So thick. And it was crazy. But even just to see him on stage, I was like, this is a very rare moment that I will take with me forever because this is an artist that doesn't perform like this very often. Mm-hmm. And to find Pharrell in concert is like a private low key or like a small like venue type thing. I feel like it's not it, especially now, it's not going to be like a see him in a big arena as
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
So that makes what I just told you even dope.
Even better.
She's bringing so much life to my life. Like, she's bringing so much shine.
Well, welcome to the Cannabis Hangout, Walter.
That is pretty dope what I did.
Yeah, it's fucking cool.
It's good to reflect. I mean, it really is.
Yeah.
Yeah,
great
so, question. Walter, in your own words, will you tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Man, so, I'm a hardworking kid from Shawnee, Oklahoma, who was fortunate enough to have enduring people see potential in me first. And from that, I was able to accomplish a lot of the things that I've ever set out to do. Before I got into cannabis, I've lived a couple of lives. I was a college football coach. Responsible for going in and recruiting young boys and convincing their mothers and fathers that I was going to make them better men by the time they left.
Yeah.
Parlayed that into a role with my tribe as a marketing director for the casino. It was Sac and Fox Nation Casino at the time. We did a big rebrand project, renamed it to the Black Hawk Casino there in Shawnee, and parlayed that into a sales career into tribal relations.
Wow.
So that's really where I cut my teeth in the sales. I was traveling around the country, you know, building relationships with tribal chair people, and chiefs, and the enterprise executives who are running their, you know, the gaming facilities and things like that. So came very natural, worked on my own sales processes. I'm a very redundant task person, only because I've played championship athletics, and there's a lot of
discipline you've learned
that
makes
like
you
that.
Be the man you are,
that's
like
right.
You were telling those kids' mothers.
That's right, because I know what it takes to win.
You do.
I've seen it. You know, I was a state champion in high school, won some championships at the University of Tulsa.
Okay.
And so parlayed all of that into sales leadership once I got into cannabis industry. Broke in with a company called Redbird. At that time, producing right at like 250 pounds of sellable A-grade nugs a month. They wanted some Oklahoma City representation, and so they brought me on, and it was pandemic, you know.
Yeah.
I wasn't traveling as much. And so, I got into the industry. I was a patient already. I'd already built relationships with, like, store owners because I'm a geek for business. Like, I love talking about small business with people.
Yeah.
And so, I was able to, I think the first day, I started, I sold like 26 pounds. I was like, oh, this is
nice.
Yeah, that's good for you. That literally does not surprise me one bit, because that's how I met you, was yeah. Redbird at the dispensary.
That's right, that's
and
right.
And you were great.
That was the first time I ever met Saba. Yeah. So, you know, it was kind of a process for me. They wanted to build some things out. They wanted to, you know, create a standard of excellence, and I was all about that. So I was able to get into sales leadership that way.
Okay.
And, yeah, and then just, you know, the journey in this industry to where I'm at with, you know, the best distillate company in the game. So
that's cool. Yeah. It's cool how life's brought you so full circle, because, first of all, I love how involved with your tribe you are. I think it's really, I think culture is a really important
What's
thing.
What's the name of your tribe again, you said?
So I'm an enrolled member of Sac and Fox Nation.
Say it slow.
The Sac and Fox Nation.
Sac and Fox?
Sac and Fox.
Okay, so cool. Sac and Fox.
It's Ampersand.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
SAC, Ampersand, Fox.
Okay, cool.
And so I'm an enrolled member, Sac and Fox Nation. And then I'm a descendant of the White Earth Band of Ojibwe, which is Minnesota Chippewa, from the northern part of Minnesota. So,
wow. Yeah. Oh, wow. That's okay. And so you had your mom's family was up from Minnesota.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So my great-grandfather was on the original allotment. I don't know how much you know about
not at all
tribal
but
history.
I literally just watched Killers of the Flower Moon, like, finished it.
It's so tribal. Okay, before you start this, tribal history and, like, is so fascinating to me because it's so
beautiful.
It's beautiful, and it's, I feel like it's so, like, the closest thing to Mother Earth, like,
that's real.
In the culture, in the...
Because that's where it all starts.
Yes,
and
it's cool how it's cool how people who are a part of tribes are so... I feel like they're so grounded.
Man,
you know, just like a different way, and just the culture that comes with it, the colors, the ceremonies, it's all so beautiful. Yeah. So, like, it's always fascinated me, but there's not enough information on it.
You're going to love this.
Okay, tell me.
Okay, so the thing about Native American culture... that what you're saying and why it's so grounded is all due to harvest, what you're able to create and what the creator is going to allow you and bless you with.
Mm-hmm.
So anything that you could sow, the hard work that comes with putting things into the ground, there's a lot of humility in that.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
If you're going to go out and work every day and you don't know what's going to happen, you got to do 3 months work. I mean, it's the cannabis industry.
Yeah.
You know, you gotta know that your quality, the elements, all of those things gotta line up. And so when you're rooted in that and you teach your kids that, you know, it's tough. And then that gets ripped away from you. We could get deep into it.
No, for sure. It's very fascinating. Mm-hmm. It's definitely a culture that I've not experienced that I would like to experience more, because I feel like it's not talked about enough.
We also just haven't had a lot of friends who I feel like have been
Native American, or if they are, they're not really tapped in.
So I'll plug, right? So one thing you can do is go to the First Americans Museum downtown.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's $10.
Mm-hmm.
And they take you on a journey of the allotments. So that's what I was getting ready to say. My grandfather, you know, back in the early 1900s, was a lot. The government came in and took the land.
Mm-hmm.
It's the U.S. government's now. And then said, we're going to allot you back your land through a governorship. What?
This makes so much sense to me after watching the movie I watched. And you're like saying it all now. I'm like, that's exactly what I saw.
So when you walk into FAM, what you'll see is this big wall that shows the dark spot. It's very dark in this part of the museum because it's dark history.
Yeah.
But you gotta be taught, you gotta understand.
Right. Yeah. It's important.
It just talks about the, you know, it's the certificate of allotment. Mm-hmm. It's big right there. It kind of talks about all the bloodshed that happened and how they took the land from everybody.
Right.
Wow. I would, if you don't know and you wanna know, First Americans Museum, a dope place. Go check it out.
Okay. All right, Brian, it's on our list.
Thanks for sharing.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Yeah, I can't explain it right now.
No,
yeah.
There's so much.
It's good.
I know. Yeah, we could have a whole nother podcast on it.
Of course. Yeah, but what I was saying was, it's cool that it's like, I feel like your life's come full circle to growing up Native and now being so involved in the tribe and having cannabis surrounded by you as a child, and now it's surrounded by you as an adult. So everything has come so full circle for
you,
and that's so cool.
That's a real,
you know,
crazy. I feel that way all the time.
Yeah.
I think about my dad, you know, being a hustler in the 70s and 80s, mm-hmm. and going to prison for the plant. Couple six times.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
And then now, you know, it's part of my, you know,
yeah,
it's how I feed my
family. Crazy to think that people like him were a part of such a movement to help pave the way for us to be able to do what we're doing.
That's real. Because you have a lot more, you know, the advocates.
Yeah.
The
people, 100%.
And you're not going to get arrested for marijuana here like
now, but
back then.
But back then, but I think, you know, if you think about it on like a sales and distribution level, right? There's a lot of people who were serviced who are now advocates because they were mm-hmm. consumers of the product. So now those same people help push the vote through, and now we're sitting, you know.
And that's why a chunk of the people mm-hmm. that came out and voted, I feel like, were all elderly.
That's right.
Yeah. All my patients I ever saw at the dispensary, even now, all elderly.
That's right.
It's like over 60% elderly people, like the rest are like 30s, 40s, and then it goes down to like 20s.
That's right. And I mean, it's the same reason why the rec vote didn't pass, mm-hmm. you know, because of that same group.
Yeah.
They vote. And if they want something, it'll happen here mm-hmm. in the state. If they don't want anything, it'll. Yeah. 500,000 people came out.
Yeah, yeah, out of the woodworks, really, though, and truly.
I showed up to my church. That's where it's like north of my house. Uh-huh. I think it was like 7:45 in the morning, and I said, "What number am I?" And they said, "You're number 102." I was like, "There's been 100 people vote already." Wow. I was like, "This isn't gonna go."
Like, I thought I was getting here early and doing a good job.
People were making sure their voices were heard. They were like, "This is a no for
me." First thing I'm doing in the morning.
Wow, that's crazy.
Wakes up at 3 a.m. just to start getting ready to vote no.
Yeah. At that time, I was working with the Big Dog Cannabis, Toby Keith's brand. He's since now going off and better. He had cancer, and he's going and doing shows. But we have a meeting that same day, and he's like, "Man, what do you think about this?"
Setting up a new company can be difficult and confusing, but establishing a strong foundation with appropriate and necessary documents can help protect you in the long run.
Jade Pebworth over at the Me Law Group in Oklahoma focuses to provide you with a comprehensive approach and intelligent advice and representation focused on resolving problems rather than inflating them.
She kills it with civil litigation, cannabis law, business planning, corporate law/litigation, and family law.
She enjoys working with companies from the ground up. Whether you need her to review and draft contracts for your company, assist in licensing applications, and more, the Me Law Group has your back.
Now, let's get back to today's episode.
What do you think about this vote? Tobe, I don't think it's going to happen, dog. Yeah. I just don't, you know.
That's a hell no for me,
dog. Hell no for me, dog. Yeah. I just, what I've seen.
That's cool.
I can put the demographics mm-hmm. together. So. Mm-hmm.
So do you feel like being in the cannabis industry has evolved you and your skill set in a way that you may not have known?
100.
And if so, how?
1,000,000%. Man, I've had to be more process oriented mm-hmm. and driven. Just as a professional, mm-hmm. just as a, you know, because around you is a lot of mediocre behavior, and you have to be able to whittle through a lot of that and understand that there, you know, this is a business, and there's, you know, you got to build a brand, and being a business person first and looking at things in a very process-driven way has always been fruitful, mm-hmm. and not because of business and capital or anything like that, but the hard work that goes into producing a quality product, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, if you put your hands in the dirt and you make it happen every single day, the fruit's gonna come. And so that's been reiterated to me, fortified my mentality. You know, I've had people who have been able to provide for their families that have worked for me, who, you know, have lived their wildest dreams because they work hard.
Yeah.
And they just are, and they actualize themselves. You know, if you go out and you
actualize, that's
you,
real.
You go out and you toil every day, or you put your hand into your purpose, mm-hmm. You know, you don't work. And then fruit just happens, you know. Yeah. So that's been just more fortified because I joined the industry.
That's
I've been
cool,
able to
Walter.
Help a lot of people, you know, feel who, be who they really truly are.
Yeah.
You
know? That's cool because gift. That's kind of, it's hard for people to do on their own if it's not, you know, we all have some innate ability inside of us. It's just like pulling it out and actualizing
that's
within
right.
ourselves, you
that's
know,
right.
and not everybody can do that.
I'll tell you, first step is figure out what you like doing. Mm-hmm. Whatever you're getting the most reps at, that's what you should be doing. If you're doing video and you like to edit TikToks and all those kind of things, you need to upgrade your equipment and get after it. Yeah. Because your purpose is right on the other side of that, you know?
Yeah, I love that. Thanks for saying that. I'm sure someone listening really appreciates that too.
I mean, I'm sometimes sitting right here.
I mean, really.
But it's good because, like, that's kind of been something that I've been like, what do I like to do? What makes me happy?
True.
And like, growing up, I've never really been encouraged to have hobbies. And so even like finding hobbies, like I don't know what I would do as a hobby. Like so many people do so many things. That's the thing is I don't know what I like because I've always grown up with people telling me kind of what to like.
Sure.
And or I just was like, okay, like whatever, like I'll just do this. Or my parents don't want me to do that. Or we were also like foreign. So my parents never really put me into any hobbies or anything. So sports was like the only thing, but I was like not a dedicated athlete. Mm. So that's like that. I mean, something that I'm going through is figuring out what I like, even career wise, to figure out what I want to do and actually pursue.
Mm. Something and you can like make money off of, like you were saying, but also be good at it and it be something that lights you up.
So you asked me who I am. There's a whole nother side, that coaching side, right? So I still have a whole nother business where I train youth football players all the way through college.
Oh, cool.
Players, right? We work out every Saturday and Sunday. And it took me all of like 12 years, 10 years to figure out how to monetize it, how to build a brand around it. But it's like it was so easy for me to do those things, run a practice.
Right, because that's who you are, like what you were already naturally
doing.
I spent
20 years, you know, my 10,000 hours in football is like toast.
Yeah.
So once I was able to like understand and formulate a plan of how to monetize that, you know, it's an additional, you know, it's good walking around money.
Yeah, for sure.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Like
a little extra change.
I can take people to dinner. I can, you know, I mean,
I know,
I can
that's
do,
everything I, too. I, yeah. It's the little things. I mean, that's
play
awesome.
Golf when I want to.
Yeah.
Yep.
And who knows what happens in the next 10 years where that's all you're doing.
You know? And that's the evolution. Like, but really, I don't think I'm ever going to be just doing one thing.
Of course.
Like,
of course not.
The brand that I'm like, you asked that question. How did this industry? Man, I've really actualized that who I am and what I'm capable of, and how I make people feel is almost like a superpower.
Mm-hmm.
And so, if I'm just me, and that value is created through connection, then people will pay me to introduce them to people.
Mm-hmm.
Again, that's just me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I figured out a lot in 4 years.
Yeah.
You know, I've grown a lot. I've suffered man, there's so many trials and bumps figuring it out, but perseverance is part of being a champion. So
It is. Yeah. I bet you're a great coach too.
Oh man, thank you.
I can see it and hear it. Yeah.
For sure. So tell us a little bit about Golden Trends and what you guys do there.
Golden Trends, back-to-back-to-back, Cowboy Cup, first place, Buckles, CO2, distillate. That's all I'll say.
amazing.
That's all I'll say. You know, it's very fortunate of to be involved with Golden Trends. Very good company, very good company culture.
Mm-hmm.
Good leadership. You know, the oil speaks for itself. It's triple filtered. We have a golden 10 process to put out some of the best, you know, cleanest distillate that when you add botanical terps, cannabis terps back to it, it's almost like a canvas. You just paint them on there. The flavor's great every time.
That's cool.
And, you know, it speaks for itself. We also have a couple lines. We do edibles and another vape line that, you know, it's our first run of distillate, and then we put that in a pin so the cost is lower, right? But, yeah, we white label, sell bulk distillate.
Nice.
I think there's 22 or so employees. They're in Norman, and so got a sales team. I'm the director of sales.
Nice.
Got a sales team of four.
Okay. It's a nice small knit team.
Yeah.
Oh, great, man. Shout out to the team. Let me tell you, these guys, we got two in Oklahoma City, Tierra and Trey. And then we've got one in Tulsa, Clay. And they do such a great job making sure that our 5'10 thread stays top.
That's right. Good for them.
When you think about the market and where the market's at in that space, to be the best 5'10 thread is, it was kind of dangerous because everybody was jumping ship for a while. Mm-hmm. And so there's still a market for it. We do have some product innovations coming in Q1, Q2. But, yeah, it's a cool spot, man. I'm very honored and blessed to be where I'm at. So,
how long have you been with them?
Well, it's just the latter part of this year.
Okay, cool.
So we got linked up through Green Mile Recruiting. Shout out to those guys over there. They did a great job.
Nice. Okay. Good.
Connecting the dots. You guys should. I'll make that connection for you guys. She needs to be on this. She's very cool. Did a great job. Very professional. And made me feel comfortable enough to make a switch. So
yeah,
you
know, that's cool. Good. That's good feedback. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So are you guys seed to table?
No. So we take in product. Raw material from a number of different outdoor farms. We have indoor farm partners. We've got some things in the works with some really nice semi-vertically integrated, retail and grow partners.
Okay.
So, we have to stay after the chase.
Mm-hmm.
If you have any raw material and you need a spot for it, let's talk.
Yeah,
for sure. I'm always on the hunt.
For sure. So is there like a quality control process that you guys go through when you're dealing with? And is there like, what's y'all standard for like what's allowed and like what?
No pesticides ever.
Yeah.
So I know some things can be remediated, but we don't want, we can't have the red triangle follow our product.
Yeah.
It's just not something that we want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the first thing. Second thing is anytime we go and we have a potential partnership on the line, we're going to take our own test samples from each strain.
Cool.
So we're going to go on site. We're going to ask that you quarantine your own product.
Mm-hmm.
We'll put our own seals and and tags on the bags that we pull from.
Yeah.
So that way we know it's not been tampered with.
For sure.
And then we'll take our sample to our lab, mm-hmm. run it, pay for it. Make sure that the stuff is clean, commence the deal, and mm-hmm. take the product and get to running. So we got three, the equipment we have is about $3 million.
Mm-hmm.
So we pump out,
That's tight.
And you guys come see it.
We'd love to see it. Sounds like it'd be a cool
little
facility.
Tour.
Yeah.
It's cool. But no, we're not seed to table, but we do have full extraction capabilities, and then we have a full kitchen.
Do you guys think you'll ever do seed to table?
We have the licenses.
Well, I feel like with even what you're saying, I just kind of figured that's why I asked that question. I feel like I could see you guys doing that in the future, just even
based on
what you're doing.
Here's what I'll tell you. My opinion, I would have never joined with Golden Trends if I would have never met and realized who was in the leadership positions.
Yeah.
Because you cannot, my opinion, me, Walter, you cannot succeed as a processor without having direct line to raw material.
I agree.
You are dead on the vine.
Mm-hmm.
And so it takes a special group of people mm-hmm. to have built relationships, have a production schedule, have an understanding of what it takes to the inputs for the throughputs.
A special group.
Mm-hmm. Because you cannot run out, especially when you're winning rewards.
Yeah.
So it's just, I walked into the situation during the process and was like blown away by who the leadership was.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I've been around enough to know what I'm looking at. So I was like, I know I can see how it works.
Yeah.
And so, seed the table is definitely, we've got to have a good year.
Mm-hmm.
If we have a good Q1, Q2, we'll be putting some stuff in the ground for sure.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
So you're also involved in cannabis banking, right?
Oh, man.
Tell us a little bit about that and what even made you want to step into that world?
Because
that's a whole nother.
Shout out to Delene Gilbert. She's the, I think she's the VP of cannabis banking at Prism Bank.
Okay.
That's my girl. She, her and Chance, her husband, They own Oklahoma Roots in Shawnee. I've known Chance for a long time.
Okay.
So back when I was getting ready to make a switch, we had had a conversation about just relationships, making introductions. They have a really nice portfolio of companies and brands who bank with them. Mm-hmm. They are ultra compliant as far as their technology to make sure that, the licensees are getting updates and alerts as to how to, get their renewal processes in line.
Okay.
When things are out of, their COO, whatever it is, mm-hmm. The back end system ensures that they are compliant.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And then the banking standards are really, really high. So when I looked at who I am and what the industry is moving towards, I needed something legitimizing as a backbone to what the brand was.
Mm-hmm.
And so to me, banking is one of those things that when that shoe drops federally, the banks are going to be at the center of everything.
Yeah.
Because then they'll be able to lend. They'll be able to, instantaneously be able to cash flow your business with credit lines because you have access.
Yeah.
And so I just wanted to maximize my relationships in the cannabis industry that way.
Mm-hmm.
And it's uninterrupted. Yeah. So, I'm not competing with anybody. It's simply me being me and introducing.
Right. Yeah.
To the bank. Now, as far as Prism Bank, the best bank on the game, just because of the compliance nature. Fees are equitable. The team, the inside team, processes everything top notch. So it just made a lot of sense.
Okay. So, it's good to know.
Yep.
Okay, let's pause for a minute and talk about Oklahoma's grassroots cannabis publication, Herbage Magazine.
They are in over 500 dispensaries statewide, providing cannabis education and supporting and highlighting the local communities.
For more information, visit herbagemag.com. That's herbagemag.com.
So for somebody listening who maybe owns a cannabis business, do you have a tip or a word of advice that you'd like to pass along that maybe they should know that you've seen people don't know when it comes to banking with cannabis? Because I know there's very specific and tight rules with that. And even if, you deposit more than your metrics made this month, where is that extra money coming from? And you have to be able to show those receipts. So what's a piece of advice that you would give?
So be transparent. I mean, that's all I can say. I know that's
what a wholesome thing.
Be transparent.
Yeah.
The best way to build a good relationship with the bank is to make sure that, and one thing Prism does is help with payroll. So if you're doing enough volume,
mm-hmm.
And you got payroll issues, we can make sure that your payroll is always funded. So most banks don't get into this, but I know, this is part of the sauce. So, if let's say your payroll is $15,000 every 2 weeks and you're on net terms with your biggest clients and that cash don't come in,
mm-hmm. okay,
and you got checks to cut,
mm-hmm. right?
Well, Prism can help you fund that,
okay,
and get you by,
okay,
that way you don't miss a beat and your employees and your ship keeps running.
That's nice,
stuff like that.
I feel like that's really helpful for small businesses, especially because it really is crazy how fast OMA renewals come up every year.
That's real.
And those fees, and it's $2,500 every time. And between that and then your yearly state fees
you
that come
be
up and then your health department fees.
You have to be liquid.
It's you have to have constant cash flow. If you don't have at least $10,000 to $20,000, even just for bills, it's hard
to
survive. It's very tight.
And that's kind of one of the things that, my understanding of small business, that's why I got into the banking side, because when I start talking to people and they're like, yeah, we do this, I'm like, man, what's your banking situation like? Oh, no, we're operating all cash. I got a safe. What, man?
Okay,
you got to come on, dude. You got to get you got to get ready. So, to your point, it's a cash heavy business.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You got to have cash flow. And if you're a manufacturer, sometimes that cash flow is long. That cycle's long.
Yeah, very.
So besides the transparent part, what do you think people are missing whenever it comes to like banking with the cannabis brand?
Mm. Man, that's a very good question. I think just the opportunities of working inside a bank and how it can help you build other revenues, right? Like okay. you could put an ATM in your spot, mm-hmm. and you can rev share off of that ATM. Yeah. You know, with our bank, this is news. I'll go ahead and drop this. With our bank, we can pick your cash up with Brinks trucks.
Oh, wow. Really? Okay.
Okay.
That's a big deal.
Big deal.
Because big deal. Then you don't have to, I mean, people are being targeted right and left because this is such a money lucrative, obviously, business.
That's
and
right.
So to have that is a big thing because you know your shit's guarded and protected at all
Every
times.
Every time. Shows
and
up.
You don't have to worry about showing up with it.
At all.
Ever.
Yeah, it comes with a pretty nice fee because it was a big deal. Deline's a monster in this industry, so she struck mm-hmm. that deal with Brinks.
That's awesome.
And, that's awesome.
And so yeah,
the move.
Go pick that stuff up, and you know, and then it think about operationally, right? Mm-hmm. Like, let's say you're a manufacturer and you're out in the sticks, and the closest bank to you is an hour and a half drive,
right?
And you commit 3 hours every Monday to go drop off cash. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, instead of that, you know, if you got those 3 hours back, and you're the guy running the bills and you're signing checks, how much more equitable is those 3 hours going to be than that 3 hour drive drop it off cash?
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, and so you know, it's a very big play. So that's one thing. The ATMs, mm-hmm. payroll. I mean, there's a lot. I mean, there's you know, and you just don't know the headaches that are being caused by those administrative tasks mm-hmm. on your finance side.
Yeah,
so
for sure.
if you can have a partner who can help alleviate. Even if you're a high impact individual and 10 hours a week getting back is dynamic for you, mm-hmm. then come on.
Yeah.
Come back.
Yeah.
Like, get your banking right and find a great banking partner that can help you with all those administrative tasks. You know what I mean?
So speaking of banking partners, is the cannabis and banking industry here satirized? Like, are there a lot of people who specialize on this? Because I know at the beginning there wasn't a ton of people, but and I honestly don't like Valiant's been one of the big ones, you know, since kind of the beginning.
Yeah,
and they're
Monica's
one
great.
Of the mainstream people who do cannabis banking. So that's really the only one that I'm familiar with up until now. So like, is it?
It's pretty competitive.
Is there more people out there, or is it pretty tight knit in regards to who do it?
I can name a bunch of competitors: Wee Street, Regent, First Fidelity.
Okay.
You know, Valiant's is in there. A couple credit unions, mm-hmm. Sevens Bank. You know, there's a bunch.
Yeah, that's cool. I remember when Sav and I were first trying to find something for our like LLC, it was hard. Yeah. We had to like switch up our name to like make a bank be like green light.
See, that's another thing too. So you know, we're not discriminatory. You know, and the payroll deal. So, man, she had me thinking
so much. So,
one thing about it is like your employees, right? So if your employees need bank accounts and your employees are banking with Arvest, well, mm-hmm. Arvest is pretty cool because that's been my bank for a long time and they don't have any problems with it. But like, let's say you're with another bank and they see that your checks, your direct deposits are coming from a cannabis business, mm-hmm. they'll shut that employee's account down.
Oh, wow.
And they won't be able to get, you know, they won't be able to accept money you're taking because they're accepting money from a cannabis business. So if you get through a banking partner, then they can set up all those accounts for free.
Yeah.
Like, that's what we'll do. We'll set up all your employees' accounts for free checking.
That's a big deal.
Yeah.
That's super helpful for employees, I feel like.
That's right.
You know?
That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's nice that it's so, like, I feel like it's a pretty personal banking experience, personable. Because even if you take care of the employees like that, then like me as an employee, I would be more willing to be like, you know, in the future, if I needed like loans or, you know, whatever,
that's right.
You've built that relationship. So it's not so overwhelming going into like Chase to be like, hey, I need a, because it's not, I don't know my banker at Chase.
Would you help me get a car? No.
Yeah.
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 No, that's part of it. I mean, all those things are accessible because they'll be able to see your cash flow in your account.
Right.
So if they can, if you go to your bank, I mean, gosh, we're getting so granular with the banking.
Yeah,
so,
I know.
So if you're an individual and you got a banking account with a cannabis bank and you go in there and they've seen that you've made X amount of dollars every year, that loan process to get qualified for a vehicle is going to be a lot smoother.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. I know what you mean.
Yeah. Like,
you've had a relationship built before.
And they don't have to check your stuff. Like, mm-hmm. your credit's always on file with them. So it just makes it, you know, more equitable for everybody in your organization. So,
that's cool. Yeah.
Thanks for sharing all that knowledge.
Yeah.
So what's something about being in the cannabis industry here in Oklahoma that you've really enjoyed?
Man, the people.
Yeah.
Always the people.
Yeah, always the people.
100%, man. I've met so many good people who care about other people, who are very thoughtful, who are just genuinely down home great folks.
Yeah,
man.
You're right.
And it makes me feel good, and that's part of my sales pitch when I go into places is we're wanting to help them maximize their business. We want them help them make their money.
Yeah.
We don't want to just take their money.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You can make money with our products, you know? And those people, they appreciate that approach, you know, because not everybody's there to help them.
Right.
You know, and they, especially now with, you know, legislation and licensing, all those things changing, people are shutting their doors, but the relationships matter and you can help people out.
Yeah.
They are very grateful. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I found myself on the other end of a lot of conversations
That's
like
cool.
that. So,
yeah.
The people are awesome.
Yeah, we would agree.
Yeah, shout out to the good people of Oklahoma.
Yeah, that's real.
That is very real.
So, Walter, we like to ask everyone this question, but what is the stigma surrounding cannabis you would like to see changed?
I wish it was more accepted in athletics than it is, just because for a long time growing up, you know, I was watching Ken Griffey Jr. and Barry Bonds and Michael Jordan and all those guys, and none of them, you know, I can't imagine who they would be or how much better they would be if they were. I mean, they probably were. Who knows?
Yeah.
But it wasn't as open. So I think if you had people who have a platform already, and they were able to speak about it.
You're right.
About how it helps them.
Yeah.
Helps them be their best
self. More accepted it would be.
Yeah.
Because
they have the greatest platform.
They do.
Them and musicians and actors.
Yes.
But like,
yeah.
You know, that's a whole nother side. Right. But like, I think through athletics, because you can visually see and it's tangible the hard work and what they put in. So it can't be true that you can smoke cannabis or consume cannabis and not be a great athlete.
Yeah.
That myth's busted, right? So
right.
If those people were able to speak on it,
yes.
Shakari Richardson's of the world, Usain Bolt's, all up and down, I think it would be a lot more impactful.
I think so too.
I agree.
Yeah, and it would help people, those athletes, so much. Like if you were, if it was, you know, normalized and legalized whenever you were playing ball. You know,
oh man, like, I don't know what I'd probably study better.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I feel probably, like that's a
same.
Lot.
I think so too.
Yeah, I've probably been a better student. Yeah.
Or just to have the, I mean, and you know, I don't know, there might have been athletes who did blow down after a game and just try to, you know, get their drug test right for the next time. But like, you don't blame them because you're like, they're just trying to relax their bodies.
But at that point, I didn't know that that's what that was.
Yeah.
Like,
it was just like a party thing.
Yeah. It was like to just get lit.
I get it. It was kind of a let's get lit thing. But if you like think about it, it's like,
oh, now
it like makes you like relax, like kind of like brings you down.
Yeah.
Even as like a college student doing that, like you're chasing that feeling of like the aftermath of like feeling good like being so stressed and like physically like mobile during a game.
That's right.
And like getting your skull smashed.
That's real. I probably would have partied a lot, like, you know, with more people. Man, we were so beat. You know, the schedule was what it was. It was 5 a.m. weights, 8 a.m. class, 1 o'clock.
That's such a crazy schedule.
Yeah. Three practice.
I always like all those athletes who do that. It's just, I have a special place for them to see that.
I appreciate that. That's not normally the case.
Yeah. that's rough for like any, and I know you're building discipline in, you know, kids while you're doing that, but it's like, it's a lot.
It's a lot.
It's a lot. It's good though.
Yeah. It's good though. It's definitely good.
It's set me on the right path.
Yes. Yeah. It's not for everybody. It's it's cool when people show up and they
it was
do
right
that
for
over
me.
And over.
I needed it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had to have it.
No.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Well, I think this wraps up today's episode, Walter.
Awesome.
Thank you so much. We really appreciate it. Thank you. We appreciate that feedback.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for being here. And to those of you that want to keep up with Walter and all things he's doing, check him out on his Instagram, cannabis_banking_plug. Thank you to everyone who tuned in to today's episode. We love you guys. Stay tuned for next week. And as always, Bran,
stay medicated.
That's it.